Last week, due to being pressed for time because of a charity hockey game, I ditched our regular formats in order to recommend to you 9 comics that I really recommended that you should check out, Ryan. That segment proved to be pretty popular, and by pretty popular, I mean it got 1 comment and some praise from the excellent deranged hairstylist, Gail Simone, which is apparently catching on now. So I decided that I'm going to do that every week, albeit on a smaller scale. Instead of talking about a bunch of comics that I'm digging, I'm only going to talk about the stuff that I read and that I liked this week. So, first up, we have got Avengers Academy, issue number 12 by the excellent Christos Gage on the job of words, and the excellent Mike McCone on the job of arts. So, I didn't really cover Avengers Academy on my recommendation post last week, and in hindsight, I really should have, because I'll put it bluntly here, this book kicks butt. Avengers Academy follows the story of an academy of young superheroes. Or at least, they think they're an academy of young superheroes. Because what they don't know is that they're actually more likely to become supervillains, and this functions as kind of a scared straight program in which former members of the Marvel superhero team, the Avengers, try to mentor these young kids so that they don't become supervillains. Now, you might ask, well, why are they so prone to becoming supervillains? It's because, in the wake of a Marvel event called Dark Reign, they were tortured by noted Green Goblin and crazy person Norman Osborn. So when you're tortured by the Jolly Green Giant, you know you're going to have some mental difficulties. Just to run down the list real quick, because you probably don't know who half of these characters are, we've got Finesse, who has the ability to know any skill and any body pattern just by looking at it. We've got Hazmat, who is a teenage girl in a hazmat suit because she uncontrollably produces radiation from her body, so any exposure to her skin will kill any living organism. We've got Metal, who is a gentleman who is covered in grotesquely metal, brittle, red bones after being tortured by Norman Osborn and cannot revert to his normal human body. We've got a whole thing dynamic going on here, the why can't I be normal sort of thing. We've also got Reptil, who can transform into any dinosaur that he wishes, and is kind of being set up to be the team's de facto leader. We've got Stryker, who is this very vapid celebrity type superhero who can generate electricity. And we've got Vale, who is this young lady who can turn into smoke and who is vastly deteriorating the more time goes on, and it's implied that this ability to destabilize her molecules will one day eventually kill her. As far as mentors, we've got Giant Man, alias Hank Pym. He has a complicated history that I'm only going to briefly get into. Basically, he was a total jerk to his wife, whose name was Janet, and he has now been trying to bring Janet back to life. We've got Tigra, who is basically a giant tiger humanoid being, and she is a very prolific superheroine who has been scarred by the traumatic beating that she received from a supervillain called The Hood that was later recorded and put up onto a YouTube-type site. We've got Quicksilver, who is the son of X-Men's Magneto, and can run really, really fast, constantly skirting the line between hero and villain. We've got Justice, who was formerly a supervillain, I believe, and who couldn't really control his powers, lashed out and killed a bunch of people, later becoming a superhero in order to atone for his sins. Speedball is pretty much in the same boat. And lastly, we've got Joe Costa, who is Giant Man's little robot helper slash creepy robotic wife. Now that you know what the characters are, the question is, what have they been doing all this time? Well, it turns out that what we thought was Hank Pym's wife being brought back from the dead was actually a godlike being known as Karina, who is the wife of another evil godlike being named Korvac. Korvac is able to come through to the Avengers Mansion through this portal that Hank Pym has generated and starts kicking the butt of a whole assortment of Avengers from Thor to Iron Man to Captain America. And it is up to this scrawny team of new recruits to try to defeat him. It turns out, however, that they're just teenagers, and they're not going to be able to win this fight unless they are transferred into the bodies of themselves 20 years into a possible future, where they all figure out that they've got vastly greater powers than they could ever imagine. Now, this issue at first, when I read the premise, I kind of groaned, because unlike previous issues of Avengers Academy, this seemed to be fairly formulaic. However, the gorgeous art of Mike McCone and the sharp dialogue of Christos Gage keeps this exciting and enthralling. Without spoiling too much, this whole becoming adults for an issue thing, it doesn't necessarily revert back for everyone. And it's a change that's going to have a lasting impact on how the Avengers view themselves. And obviously, not everyone could make this change, and some of the people who aren't, like Metal and Hazmat, have a slight bit of emotional turbulence. That's an understatement, but a lot of emotional turbulence following them not being able to transform into adults full time. Overall, very good issue of Avengers Academy that should not surprise anyone. I give this issue 7.5 adults body switches out of 10. Next, we have, let's see, we have Teen Titans 94, written by J.T. Krull and drawn by the completely amazing Nicholas Scott. Now, you might know Nicholas Scott from such titles as Birds of Prey and Secret Six, which I cannot sing the praises of enough. And you might know J.T. Krull from the recent Blackest Night tie-in issues of Teen Titans. Now, J.T. Krull's run on Teen Titans was heralded as bringing some fun and some levity back to a book that has, for the last couple years, been very grim and angsty. The Teen Titans have had more deaths in the family than a cancer ward lately, and it's really taken a toll on the impact of the book. You've had people being mauled by vicious dogs, you've had people being killed and stuffed into matchboxes, you've had people beating people up with the corpses of dead cats. Overall, it is not a good time to be a Titan. The question is, has J.T. Krull been able to bring that levity back to Teen Titans? And I'm sad to say that that answer is a resounding no, not yet. This issue follows the team newly led by Red Robin, not the food restaurant. That's actually the new identity of the third Robin, whose name is Tim Drake. But he has just now returned to this team in order to help them find the missing parents of this new Titan whose name is Solstice. She's an Indian American, and while I do like that diversity is being put into this book, she speaks with this stilted sort of pattern that makes me think of her more as a stereotype, and plus the ever-present angst and gore and vapid dialogue of Teen Titans is sadly still here, even 5 or 6 issues into Crawl's run. The only saving grace, and boy is it saving grace, of this book apart from Solstice is the excellent artwork of Nicholas Scott, who could draw the phone book and still put it in the Smithsonian when she was done. Every page pops off into your eyelids, and even though this script is a boring fetch quest of, okay, let's beat up some people, she manages to bring an energy to this book that, quite frankly, is sorely lacking in its writing. I'm still considering whether or not to drop Teen Titans from my pull list, but it is very possible that I won't be plunking down the money for that book next month. On a much better note, we have Wolverine number 8, written by the rustic and ball-crushingly amazing Jason Aaron, and drawn by the ever-astounding Daniel Acuña. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, because half of the time I just want to go, Acuña Matata. But anyway, this is the conclusion to a storyline that has been running since pretty much the very beginning of Jason Aaron's second volume of Wolverine, which is sending our clawed Canadian to the very depths of hell. Now, this concept has been tried and worked to great success in titles such as Secret Six and obviously Hellblazer. I believe even an issue of Swamp Thing showed us the dissonance of hell. But rarely has it ever been this bloody and carnage-ridden whilst still providing great character moments. I am not a huge Marvel Universe fan, and I am certainly not a fan of Wolverine. I've always seen this character as kind of your muscle-bound action hero, and that just does not appeal to me. He has never been a character with that much depth, and he's been used so much that any magic that he might have has been long gone, or so I thought. You see, Jason Aaron is the comic writer to end all writers. In addition to writing great titles like The Other Side and Scalped, he has also been making his mark on Wolverine for the past couple years and turning him from this angsty killing machine to somebody who you have general compassion for, throwing a birthday party for him in issue 7.1 that had a lot of cannibalism in it, actually. But he's clearly trying to test the depths of Wolverine's character here by condemning him to hell and sending him to a place that none of us want to go. Needless to say, this is a rip-roaring conclusion to the storyline. To say much about it would give it away, although I will say that we do get a cameo from a certain deceased X-Men, actually more than a few, that I know a lot of you have missed for a long while. So definitely, no matter if you're a Marvel diehard or not, check out Wolverine number 8 for some cutthroat action and some great character work. Lastly, we've got Super Dinosaur number 1, drawn by Jason Howard and written by the always amazing Robert Kirkman. Now, Robert Kirkman writes comics that are all across the board. He can write something as lighthearted and fun, at least for its first half, as Invincible, or as bleak and depressing as The Walking Dead. But Super Dinosaur 1 blazes a new pathway for Kirkman that I didn't think he was apt to try anytime soon, namely all-ages comics. This is what you would definitely call a quote-unquote kids comic, but Robert Kirkman still brings his great dialogue, great pacing, great action, every bit to this comic. Now, this comic is about a kid who has access to this giant robotic dinosaur. If that doesn't get you to want to rush out and buy this comic, I don't know what will. But in addition, there's actually some pretty heavy commentary on Alzheimer's. They can't really come out and say that it's Alzheimer's, but basically this kid's father has Alzheimer's, and the struggle of his dealing with this, while it's still a very funny and fun and age-appropriate book, adds a little bit of depth to this story that I definitely didn't expect. If only for that reason, and for the colorful, vibrant, at sometimes unabashedly wild artwork of Jason Howard, I'd recommend that you rush down to your comic book shop and pick up Super Dinosaur number 1. That about concludes both this episode of Last Comic Standing and this episode of Sugar Tomatoes. As always, you can contact me at Tomato Surprise on Twitter, RW Mead by using at RW Mead. This blog's official Twitter account, as always, is at Sugared Tomatoes. Or you can send us an email for more long-form responses by using sugaredtomatoes@gmail.com. You can always leave a comment down below. I'd also recommend another blog that just opened up on the blogosphere called Bleached Brain from SuperFlash101, who is consistently one of my favorite users on Twitter. You can follow him at Bleached_Brain_ on Twitter, or go to www.bleachbrain.wordpress.com. As always, leave feedback in the comments, and thank you for listening.